Mother Nature, Mother Nature, she's gonna get you. Yeah, she's gonna get you. Mother Nature, she's gonna hate you. And she's gonna get you. Gonna get you, you betcha.
That's almost 52 years so far. The world has become a worse and worse place.
Welcome to Nature Bats Last in the Progressive Radio Network. It is NBL and PRN.FM. This January 3rd, 2017 edition, episode 101 of Nature Bats Last comes to you live from Burlington, Wisconsin. And we're trying to get Guy from Belize, but don't know if we're going to be successful. If so, he'll be calling in from Belize. Our thanks to Afrozen for his theme song contribution. And you can find more of his work on SoundCloud.com. We'll be taking calls as well, so please dial us up toll-free at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Today's show, we catch up with NBL contributor and past guest Forrest Palmer. Forrest writes prolifically on Facebook with his thoughts of the day, and for Wrong Kind of Green with fellow contributor and friend of the show, Corey Morningstar. If you're fortunate enough to follow Forrest on Facebook, you'll have experienced his journey over the past several years. I refer to Forrest as the most honest man on the internet, and for good reason. He's allowed us into his mind, his heart, and his soul like few other people I've ever met. His words and actions are to be admired, and he challenges his audience, and he never holds back. This show owes a great deal to Forrest, and gratitude to him for his contributions and appearance. Welcome to Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network, Forrest Palmer.
Hello. Thanks for having me on today, Mike. Much appreciated, as always.
Absolutely. As I said in the intro, you know, those of us that, you know, are fortunate enough to be your Facebook friends or follow you on Facebook, you share a lot of personal information that is highly emotional and cuts to the chase, not only about what's going on in the world politically and socially and environmentally, but really what's going on and the stuff I enjoy, the stuff that's going on with you personally and how you're dealing with that. And I know a few months ago we kind of caught up with you briefly about what you were doing these days, but let's begin with, because it all really comes down to what we each personally do and how we respond to this and what's going on in the world we live in. So kind of fill us in. What have you been doing, and where are you at?
Well, what I've been doing really is getting my mind together, to be quite honest with you. After over 20 years in corporate America, I'll be quite honest with you. When you get out of it, it's kind of like getting out of prison. Not to relegate anything that I was going through to the vagaries of being in prison and everything that we know that goes on in those institutions, both from other prisoners and then even from the guards and everybody in between, but just getting my feet on the ground and trying to get a hold of not just leaving, but then what is the next step. And it's been about 6 months. I guess I say the first 4 months were just exhaling, to be quite honest with you. Now I'm into, what am I going to do? And you said, I write for Wrong Kind of Green, and I love that. I love Corey Morningstar. I love you guys. But I'm 44 years old, and believe you me, I'm not independently wealthy by any stretch of the imagination, right? And right. The one thing I have learned is that speaking truth to power, I don't even want to say it's lucrative. It's just hard to survive off of that, right? So that's where I'm at now, trying to figure out exactly what it is that I'm going to go down, where I can both be honest with myself, be honest with the world, and actually, I'm not looking to change it. I had this conversation with Corey Morningstar, and it's we can't save it, right? I mean, we can't save the civilization, even if we wanted to. It's not worth saving. Because, you know, like, we run through over a trillion barrels of oil already, right? What are we going to do? 2 trillion in another 30, 40, you know, it's impossible. So why worry about that? I'm here to provide solace with those who understand what it is that you know and I know, and also provide a smile. If you have been following me, anybody that's listening, I've been a lot more lighthearted of late because I am out of the system, because I can sit back and laugh now at the absurdity of it all. Like the absurdity of anybody thinking that Donald Trump is going to be the solve as to what's going to fix the world, right? It's incredible. But I live in Houston, Texas, which is a conservative city, say the least. The oil and gas industry runs this place. But most of the people here believe in Donald Trump, and they think that he's going to do something good because they're just trying to get to the next step. I like to say all the time, be it you, Michael, or Guy, or Corey, or anybody else, when you've gone to the future and you've seen this dystopian wasteland that's awaiting us, and then you come back, it's hard to really get people to understand exactly where it is you're coming from. So I say, like, mostly what I've been doing is just trying to get my head together and figure out how I'm going to make it, because I do live in the real world. It's kind of like, if you want to use the analysis or comparison of prison, if I went back there, then I'm going to have to do what I have to do in order to survive. You know what I mean? Whatever that may be, if it's kill somebody, if it's, you know, do whatever. I mean, that's just that's the actual factuals of it. So in that same vein, it's like, well, what line am I willing to cross? Because we always have the conversation about jobs here in America. We need jobs. We need jobs. But this is what I'm asking everybody now. Don't tell me what it is that you are willing to do. What won't you do? What won't you do? Will you, if you're a welder, will you – will you trample over the rights of people in the Midwest for the Keystone XL, right? Or if you're an oil and gas man, will you go and will you drill into the water lines of people who need their municipal water, whatever it may be? What is it that you won't do? And the sad thing is that I understand, like, it's only the legalities of it which determine or dictate whether or not people are going to get into a particular field or not. There's no type of morality into it whatsoever. And the thing that disgusts me most of all about America specifically and the Western world is that they always act like moral rectitude is right in line with the legality of it all. And that's never been the case. So I ask people to just look more in depth. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you bring up a good point. I remember teaching The Grapes of Wrath, and in the book, you know, there's guys that come around and they basically, with bulldozers, they knock down people's houses who can't really afford their mortgage anymore. And then their line is, well, it's just my job. And I think that's a great point, because we always look at it in the way we live now. We don't see that personal impact because, you know, I am not sitting on the bulldozer knocking this guy's house down. But what I am doing is I'm sitting in a classroom and I'm perpetuating and promoting going out there and being a consumer in the dominant culture. And it's the same thing. And that's why I left. And I'm in the same boat you are. I'm 5-6 years into this, but I'm still looking for a means to stay alive, make some money, and not perpetuate it, you know, as best possible.
So. Yes. Yeah. That is the most difficult part, because there aren't that many people that are in alignment with us. All right, with God. There just aren't that many. And it isn't even being morbid about it. It's just being honest about it. And most people can't really understand exactly what that entails. Right? I mean, they look at everything it is that we have going on here, and they feel that in, I guess, 5-6 years, everything will be okay. Well, we know that it's not going to be okay, no matter who it is that is going to excuse me one second. I'm sorry. Family obligations there. I apologize.
No worries. That. Life happens.
What I was just saying is that we see it, they don't, and it's very irregular to go through your entire life at our age and not meet anybody that's in close proximity to you that sees everything as being the same. And it's very disheartening. I mean, I use the example all the time. Corey Morningstar is a white woman from Canada. I'm a black man, grew up in South Central Los Angeles, and I'm here in Houston. And we have to talk with one another just so we can get our minds right because we have so very few people that we can talk with in our community, if anybody.
Right.
That's sad. That's tragic. And tragic for me also, right? Not just for her. I mean, for you and everybody else. And to say that you have those lines in the sand of things that you're not willing to do anymore makes it very difficult in a society where most of everything that we have is predicated off going across the lines that we have designated in our lives.
Yeah. And I wrote a little bit about this at some point, but I think, I don't know if people actually have that line sometimes. You know, I used to ask my students this question. I used to ask them, what would it take for you to leave the United States? Like, what would have to happen where you just no longer can stay here, believe in it? And I'm talking by choice, like, you know, you have the choice to leave because, you know, some line has been crossed. And people, and these are students, and I understand that because they're young and they may not have thought of these things. But I've asked this of adults, and they look at me like I'm insane. Like, why would I ever leave? Or if I ask them, how long do you think the United States will be around? And of course, they all think it's going to be around forever. So I don't know. Maybe that line isn't there, at least consciously.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. At the end of the day, I am an electrical engineer, so sometimes I even go back and look at numbers just to give myself something to do. It gives me solace because for me, math and science are the only things that are universal. It doesn't matter if it's here or a galaxy away. 2 + 2, if you're on a 10-base number system, equals 4. Right? I mean, that's a given. So I was messing around, and, you know, we use 96 million barrels per day globally. Right? Sorry about that.
Right.
Per day globally. And if you do the math, I'm not going to go through all of it, but if you look at all the numbers, you could take that 96 million barrels of oil, put them in 1 gallon containers, the same milk cartons that you buy at the grocery store, right? And it'll encircle the earth 15 times. Now, if you think about that mass amount of oil that we need in order to survive, how can you think that you can use that each and every day and then have to go up in order to provide the growth in population with more oil? So it's 96 million now. Off the top of my head, I think it's supposed to be 120 by like 2025 or something like that. But anyhow, the point being is that we've gone from using 5-10 million to 96. And it's not going down because the economy is based upon perpetual growth. But to tell people this and then even use the mathematics that you learned in school and to go off on a different tangent makes you just one of the most abominable creatures imaginable, to be quite honest with you. It's like people will look at you with disgust when you give them the numbers and the facts.
Yeah.
Because it actually makes them have to question their entire existence, and that's something that people aren't willing to do.
You're absolutely right. I mean, obviously, you know, You have done that. You've questioned your entire existence, and you've shared it with people who follow your work. And so let's go back to, you know, you talked a little bit about, you know, kind of almost living on an island in this community that this small community we have of folks that sort of see things in a particular way. And you talk with Corey, and, you know, from time to time we talk with one another. But let's talk about the emotional roller coaster of that, because, you know, you're a guy who, one of the few people I know besides Guy and myself who have gone to a spot where they've quit their jobs and they've reexamined everything that they know. And so talk about what that was like, maybe once you started to get into this and delve into the possibility of not having a steady or a reliable
slave.
Income.
I like
that meant to you.
Yeah. You know what? I have to honestly say that it's been throughout my entirety of the entirety of my time in corporate America where I've questioned this. It's just that when you have somebody to live for, like kids or something of that nature, then you kind of can shun it aside, even though you know the truth. It's easier to shun it aside because up from one time I was 22 to I was 36, I took care of my mother. Because she was a diabetic amputee. So she had lost her left leg below the knee and all the toes on her right foot.
Okay.
And from that moment forward, I had to take care of her. You know, and that was the predominant thing in my life. And nothing was going to get in my way of that, not even my personal feelings. You know, because I know what she sacrificed for me. I had to do that for her. So even though I'm reading all this stuff you know, I'm reading everything and digesting it. And I'll tell anybody, the first time that I actually thought about things was when I was listening to Richard Hineberg in about 2000, right? About 2000. And he said, I was listening to him on a radio show. It was back when they had, I think I just got a cable into my apartment. And I downloaded a show when I was working at my apartment, and I was listening to him as I was working. And he was telling the interviewer that we use 75 million barrels of oil a day. Mm-hmm. And I never forget, I thought to myself, wow, that's a lot. You know what I mean? I was like, wow, that's a lot. But most people who listen to that, not digest it and just leave it alone. I took it and then I ran with it. So, you know, I would do my job and I read more. Then you go through all these different iterations. I'm sure you did the same thing as God. You go through solar cell panels, biofuels, all these different things that somehow going to give us or continue this Western lifestyle. But then you go and you don't just say, okay, we have solar cell panels and we don't think about it. You actually get into the meat of the argument and you realize, like, no, this isn't going to answer the equation of how we're going to continue this thing going. So, yeah, long story short, I heard that, and then I just went on and on and on and kept reading and kept reading and kept reading. Then I realized, whoa, this isn't going to continue. And then you get into, should it continue? Is it good for anybody else to continue to live like this? Or even lie to other civilizations and tell them that they can somehow replicate what we have here. You know, that's disingenuous because we know that that's impossible. That Nigeria is not going to be able to build the middle-class lifestyle that we have here in America. Most of Europe can't do that, right? They don't have anything close to this. I mean, this country itself was built on fossil fuels, right, more so than anybody else. I mean, I think that even during World War II, the United States provided the Western powers or the Allied forces 90% of their fuel. They couldn't do that today, of course, because it wasn't long after World War II that the United States became an oil importer and not an exporter. So it's going to be impossible today. So we're seeing it go down. So anyhow, those are things that made me start to question exactly what was going on here after I heard Richard Hineberg. But I was able to put it aside as long as my mother was alive. She died approximately 8 years ago now, right? And after that, I noticed that there was a slow progression where I couldn't get myself together to go to work. It became so horrific for me to get up. And before I quit 6 months ago, it was to the point where, like, Sunday nights, I would just start, like, I would just stay up to, like, 2 or 3 in the morning just because I was like, man, I do not want to go in to this gig on Monday. You know, and that was, like, but it wasn't the slave in and of itself. It was more so just like corporate America, because I work in a lot of different industries for a lot of different people. It's been the same, excuse my French, it's been the same, you can bleep this out, it's been the same bullshit each and every time. You know, I always like to say that bosses are like assholes. We all have, and they all stink, right? Yeah. I mean, there have been some that are better than others, but for the most part, because they're not there to help you. They're there to get as much work out of you as they can, and then when they don't need you anymore, they'll get rid of you or whatever it may be. I've seen some very good workers who've been diligent, and you know, they've gotten laid off. You know, and what I've noticed is that I'm not the only one that's unhappy. Most people I know that work are unhappy. You know, it's getting worse because as we're even working more now, we're seeing less return even on our work. And I'm just saying just from a Western aspect. You're not even happy doing the things that you need to do in order to make money in this world to survive. So it isn't as if you have this grandiose lifestyle and you're enjoying it. Most people are miserable. Most people are miserable, and they're becoming more miserable each and every day. And they are starting to question the system, although it's more so for, I say, personal reasons. Narcissistic reasons that they're questioning. Me, it's like I tell anybody, and I tell anybody, I quit. So it wasn't as if I had a bad life and then I came to the conclusion that all this is going to end. No, I came to the conclusion that all this is going to end and that is wrong, and then I acted upon that information, which is a big difference. Most of the time people get aggrieved for some personal reason, and then all of a sudden they want to be a revolutionary. Right? I've seen that before. So, so from the time my mother died up until today, it's just been a slow progression where, you know what, I just can't do this anymore. And I tell anybody, I love myself, but I hated my life. And when you love yourself and you hate your life, it's a miserable existence. Because you know that the fault doesn't lie within you. Right? You know what I mean? The problem with peak oil is not the fact that I can't find a way to overcome this issue. It isn't my personal weakness. It's a problem in society that's not acknowledged. Same thing with climate change. All these things, carbon emissions. You know, like most people today, I have never been out on my daily exercises in this world doing things and ever heard or overheard a conversation where somebody is actually talking about climate change.
It's
insane. I've never, like, you know, you can sometimes sit at a table at a coffee shop and you hear the people talking about, never. I might hear them talk about the president or something like that, but never any big overriding issues, you know, or gossip or something like that. Or football, of course.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so for me, it was after my mother died. That's what started this transition from actually reading it to affecting my psyche in a positive way, to be quite honest with you, or if not positive, an honest way.
It seems to me that a lot of people who listen to the show and who I interact with on the various groups that, you know, deal with these particular topics, that, you know, people, as you know, we go to a lot of dark places. You know, we go through the stages of grief, and we have the ups and downs and the ebb and flows of you know, digesting this information. And, you know, some of us, I think we kind of just keep regurgitating in on it, and we fixate on it to a sense. What have you done to kind of, you know, balance? I know I'm sure a large part of it is your writing, but what have you done to keep an emotional balance? Because if you keep going down this dark rabbit hole, I mean, as you know, we see it all the time. It can consume people, and they end up, you know, in a fetal position in their closet. So what have you done in your life to kind of maintain that edge of being in the, you know, in the know and not, you know, crumbling?
Quitting my job.
Yeah. That's what I did. I mean, that's what I did too.
Because I can be totally honest with you. You know, when I told you guys after I just quit my job, guy asked me, like, well, what was the trigger? And I said, well, the trigger is if you're going to pull a gun out and actually pull the trigger on yourself. Right now, I've never had a suicidal thought in my life. You know what I mean? Because I love myself. You know what I mean? I don't, like, despise myself. I love myself. But when you hate your life, you know, I read a story one time, and it was about the maroon colonies. And what the maroon colonies were these slaves, sometimes here in the United States, they didn't migrate up north. Sometimes they would just go on the outer edges of whatever plantation that they were living in. Right, so they would just be like, oh, well, I can see my kids, and they would go hide in a cave for a while, and this, that, and other. But there was one case where these guys, I think it was five men, or around that number, approximately, and they ran away from their plantation, and they got cornered later on by, you know, like their slave master and some guys that were, you know, were looking for runaway slaves. But they ended up committing suicide. They jumped into, like, this burning cauldron, like a fire, like at a welding shop or whatever it may, not welding, but I forget what they called the artisans back then. But they ended up killing themselves, all five of them, because they were like, you know what, I'd rather die than have to go through this. They loved themselves, or they would have stayed on a plantation and not run off. But they just reached a point, like, you know what, just call it a day. And that's why I was like, I love myself, but I hate my life. The life that they had on that plantation was much worse than death, even though that they loved themselves. And that's how it was with me. You know what I mean? That's about the best way that I can explain it. Writing is cathartic for me. It's cathartic for me. And I even told Corey that she's like, well, why do we do it? We have to do this. We have no other choice. You know, you could have continued down your path and, you know, remained a teacher and done all these different things, but you would have been miserable. You know, there's no way that you could have continued down that path. I couldn't continue down that path. It was inevitable. You know, I realize that now. Eventually, that was going to happen. You know, and I mean, I can't blame myself for seeking out the truth of everything from climate change to the nuclear catastrophes that we have going on. Fukushima's still going on. No one's even talking about that. But if I remember correctly, they're dumping 300 tons of nuclear wastewater into the Pacific Ocean because it'll be 6 years, I believe, coming up in March of 2017. Yeah. So, you know, if anybody thinks that they're running all this wastewater and storing it someplace, well, you know what? I got some good real estate in the Florida Everglades to sell you, right? So yeah, right. People aren't even paying attention because it's now become a part of our daily lives. We don't even have to think about it. Oh, well, the world didn't blow up yet. So right. Everything must be okay. Definitely not okay. Right?
No.
So, yeah, that for me, that's what it was. I had to quit my job, and then also the writing is very cathartic for me as an individual. I couldn't live without doing one or the other, quitting my job and writing. Even if it to whatever small audience it is, right? Even if I have to go and do something else to, you know, I cover my nut, and I never give myself up, but be it legal or illegal, I can't even say immoral because my entire time in corporate America was immoral, to be quite honest with you. And we can talk about that at another juncture, but my entire time and all of it was legal. Right? All of it was legal. So, I mean, I have no problem with illegalities. Let's say marijuana, right? Now, all of a sudden, you can, choice states, was it Colorado, Washington, California, you can now sell marijuana. Well, it's never been immoral. It was just illegal, right? I mean, I've known plenty of people that smoked weed. My father smoked weed, copious amounts of weed. And I tell everybody, if you want to know the truth, he was probably, I won't say the only person, but the one that was in close proximity that I had daily dealings with who actually read just for pleasure. I never saw that. I haven't seen that. And I've known people in the black middle class, black lower class, white middle class, Latinos. I have rarely seen that. Somebody that you see actually reading a book where they're reading it for just personal pleasure to grow as an individual and not for some type of monetary gain. That's a rare.
You've touched upon legality, and I think that's the thing that I run into a little bit when I write some articles once in a while is people are more concerned. Like I had this debate, dialogue, discussion, argument with a guy who lives in Hawaii and he's off grid and all this stuff, but he just could not fathom that somebody would actually default on their debt because that, he figured, was screwing somebody, somebody else in the system. He couldn't wrap his head around that the system is a Ponzi scheme and that the fact that you believe in it is part of the game. And so people will go to a certain point, but it seems like, as you mentioned, that legality thing is really how they base their moral compass.
Oh, without a doubt. Oh, without a doubt. I mean, how I grew up, and I'll tell anybody this, I mean, for all the things, because I grew up in South Central Los Angeles in the 1980s. Very violent environment. But most people there, they're just like everybody else. I mean, they go to whatever job it is they have to go to, and then they come home. So even in the inner city where I grew up, for all of this quote-unquote violence, still the norm is to believe in just go to work, come home, read the newspaper, spend a couple hours with your kids, with dad, maybe do whatever, and then go to bed and do it all over again. So we're locked into that system just as much as anybody else. So when you talk about this guy and he said about the debt, I mean, it's getting to the point now because student loan debt, school debt, has now outpaced even credit card debt. So now I think it's up to $1.3 trillion for school loans. So now you're starting to indebt kids even before they get to college. It used to be, okay, well, we even give them a credit card after they get out of college, right? But now it's like, I never forget, when I was at LSU early 90s, that was one of the first things when I went to the student union. They had, like, the little tables outside, and they had credit card applications and this, that, and the other. And it's like, wow, they're trying to – and I couldn't really formulate it back then or grasp why they were doing that. Now I can, of course. I'm 44 years old. And it's sad that most people who are 44 years old still haven't migrated from the time they were 19, so they still think that that's the logical way to go about things. But I'm looking for the day where they actually just start putting the debt on the babies when they come out in the hospital, to be quite honest with you. I mean, it's going to get to that point because the only way that they can enter new money into the system, of course, is through debt. And it's getting worse and worse. It's becoming just so ingrained in this society that you can't even talk to people about it because we're so used. Cause I'm 44, so most people I grew up with believe that you just don't leave debt. You always pay your debts, and you feel like a deadbeat, quote unquote, if you don't do that. And so most people can't break out of that shell. They feel like it defines them. And
absolutely, you know, and it's part of the narrative, and I understand. I mean, I'm in a completely different situation than a lot of people. You know, I'm a white middle class educated male, so I had a situation where it made it easier for me to do this because I've always been provided for. But at the same time, if you see the game and if you see the narrative, and you continue, if we continue as a global society, a global culture, to finance our own destruction, we're financing our own suicide. At some point, when do we go, I am not paying for my own death?
I don't think it's going to happen. To be quite honest with you, I think it's going to have to be something. Yeah. It's going to have to be something drastic. You know, like in 2008, when. Basically, like, what was it, within a day or something like that, the entire banking industry would have just collapsed, right? Yeah. And Henry Paulson brought in B of A and brought Goldman Sachs. He said, now, you're going to take this amount. You're going to take these millions and yada, yada, yada. And AIG, you're done. You know? So they went through all these different machinations and it was so easy to just go into a back room and do that, right? Because it's finance.
Right.
At the end of the day, you can just give them loans. I forget how many trillions of dollars they've thrown at the banks, but they can just do that because it's nothing but numbers on a page or numbers in the computer now, but that's not going to be the case when there's water, right? When there's water scarcity, you can't go into a back room and just fudge some numbers and then just come out and everything's going to be okay. So I think that's what's going to happen, right? I know a guy has caught a lot of flack because he's saying 10 years. And for me, I use the, example of if I put my finger in a socket switch, right? So if I put my finger in a socket switch, right? My body's like a big resistor. I hope you understand. So when you put your finger in a socket and you're grounded, you're on the ground, you're on the floor, that electric current is trying to find a pathway to ground through your body. Now, I've been shocked before. It could just be out and I remove my finger. But I could have a heart attack and die also. You know what I mean? If it's not in shape, or it hits me the wrong way, or this, that, and other. So there are all these extremities of life, a min, a max. So, yeah, we might just have 10 years. God might be wrong. It could be 5 years. So that's where I'm at. I'm like, regardless of exactly what time it happens, we still have whatever, like, that's in the future. Nobody can really, I guess, predict it. But we have to do what we can in between that time, and then also know that there are not going to be any easy answers, quote unquote, to any of this. And all signs point to the fact that we're fucked. Excuse my friend. I mean, we are fucked. If people think that they're going to be jumping in the cars and driving all around these cities in the next 20 or 30 years, then they're insane. You know, they're insane. I live in Houston, Texas, and Houston, Texas has some of the worst roads in the world. And what people can't understand is that the amount of money that they tax the oil companies for in order to do their business in the city, they destroy the roads worse than if they took all that money and actually used it on the road. So they're causing more damage than they even help provide any services to the city, even from a rationale of somebody who is a capitalist or however it is you want to describe it. You know, it's insane. Yeah. I can't help but laugh at it.
I recently watched the film The Big Short, and at the end of the movie, The Big Short is about the financial crisis and the bursting of the housing bubble, and at the end of the movie, they, you know, kind of showed what each guy was doing. And the main character that Christian Bale played, you know, he was the guy that kind of knew the housing bubble was going to go and tried to tell people. And anyways, it was fitting that the one thing he's doing now is he is investing in water. And I'm like, it doesn't even seem to matter. You can show people what happened and that the smartest guy in the room is now investing in water. You can have Edward Snowden come out and say your government has been spying on you and collecting all this data. You can have Julian Assange come out and tell you everything else about the world that's been going on with the Panama Papers. And it just becomes a movie and it becomes shtick. And it's like there is no that's why I keep saying there is no shift of consciousness that is going to happen. This baby is running it right off the cliff. And then we'll go, oh, but maybe I should still pay my fucking credit card bill off next week because the banks might come back in business. I mean, what is it fucking going to take at this point is really what I'm trying to say. And you've made a major shift. I've made a major shift. There's plenty of other people that follow the show that have made major shifts. But, you know, at the end of the day, like you just said, there are no guarantees. We could be done in 5 years. We could be done, you know, chaos theory. We could be done in fucking 5 minutes. Or this could just drag on indefinitely. But it seems to me that I don't know. I'm not that smart of a guy. But I just can't figure out why people aren't doing the math with the infinite growth on the finite planet like you brought up earlier. It's not a tough math problem.
Yeah, that's it. It's not, and none of it really is. But it's the easy things. Sometimes some cats have an easy time making a 3-point shot than a simple layup. Right. So I mean, I don't understand why people can't understand that you can't have a course. And we said this before: infinite growth on a finite planet. Right. I mean, you think that just that simple concept people could grasp, but they just think that somehow, some way, it's just gonna continue. I mean, I grew up in a black community. And we are staunch Baptists in that community, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I'd say probably this is just my personal assessment, no numbers or what. But no, I think that a Pew Research said like 80% of black people here in America are Christian. And the story I was told when I was a child was that they was going to have the rapture. So yeah. I could just be talking to you on this phone, and all of a sudden Jesus would come back, disappear you, and then there would be nobody on this line. You know, our cars would just start driving on the side of the road because Jesus decided right. to grasp. And I heard that story for the entirety of my youth, and at least I could say when I was a youth, I was like, man, I don't believe this crap. This is not true. I don't see it. But because you have to survive, you know, adults are like, oh, yeah, Jesus, you know, he'll come back. But now, when I do talk with Baptists, no one's even talking about that anymore because I think a lot of people do realize that there's something wrong, quote unquote, but they've been told so many lies for so long that now is just reflexive that they just, no. They're working on it in a lab or they're doing something, this, that, and other. So obviously, once they don't have water and once the trucks stop running into the grocery stores, then chaos will reign. Right? I mean, one of the things that I want to tell you about is, like, what are my long-term goals? And I'll be totally honest with you. My long-term goal is to get up to, like, the Great Lakes area. That's my long, like, and when I say long-term, I'm talking about, like, maybe 5 or 10 years. 10 years. 10 years, hopefully things haven't collapsed to the point where I can't actually make my way up to the Great Lakes area. But I want to be by as much fresh water as possible. I think when social collapse comes, and this isn't a joke, and this isn't me being facetious or anything, but, I mean, give me some water. Water is more important than even, I don't want to say more important than land, but you can't grow any crops without water, even if you have terrible land. So my thing is like, okay, well, I need to be as close to water as possible because that's something that people have no appreciation for. If I go to people right now and tell them that, yo, we're running out of water, what they'll do is drive me to the nearest grocery store, walk me inside and point to a whole aisle and say, plenty of water. plenty of water. There's no problem. You know,
right.
But I know this, and you know this, that the numbers outside of just the framework of what the society has told us where we're going to find water is starting to dwindle as, you know, not as we speak, long before now, but it's getting worse and worse with each passing day. And when I say no one, I mean pretty much the average citizen out here, no one's talking about it. Because they have no clue. I think that also the time that you dedicate to something like this and learning about, not just that it's happening in a general sense, but to contextualize it at a minute level takes a lot of time. So I know you've had to give up, you've given up some relationships with your friends, your family, because right. you had to go down this journey of finding out the truth. And you've had to leave some of them and do your thing because you're like, yo, I can't not talk about it. It's just impossible. You know, it's going to affect you personally, professionally, time-wise, and everything else. But that's the journey. That's the price that you pay. You know,
yeah.
And I think for me, that gives me personally more solace than anything else, is to know that I do know the truth and I'm willing to speak it to the best of my ability.
Right.
And I hate when people relegate it to nah, that's your truth. No, when you talk about the fact that we're running out of water, that is the truth.
Right. That's the math problem. The math problem is
that's
the fucking truth.
Yeah. So there's nothing else to establish other than that. But long term, you know, that's my goal. Like long term in quotations, because I'm 44 now. So I'm talking about if there hasn't been a social collapse between now and 10 years from now, then I would like to be someplace up north, as close to fresh water as I can be.
Yep, you know, sounds like of a good
course
plan.
I know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, of course I know that it's not going to be easy, because as things do get worse, of course, if I am up there and then 5 years later it gets worse, then all of a sudden people are going to have a brilliant idea of going up there also, and then chaos reigns. But maybe if I make it up there for everybody else, I at least have 5 years of peace before all the tourists come up there and try and commandeer everything, right? So
right,
that's
right,
where
absolutely.
I look at it.
All right, we have a caller, Desiree from New York. You're on.
Hi. I've been listening to your show, and I just had a question, just like some of my background. I'm in New York, live in an apartment. I'm one of those debtors. I'm in student debt. I've accepted the fact that I'll never be able to pay it off, but I'm also one of these people who, honestly, I don't even really talk about the environment all that much, although I hear PRN a lot, so I'm on top of what's going on, but I just get these looks like, what are you talking about? In terms of, like, eating food, eating better, like, I'm vegan and all that stuff. But I wanted to know, I'm 29, and I'd like to make some changes. And I, just like you, I'm looking to moving away. I'm looking to moving up north with me and my boyfriend. And what are some first steps that I can take? Because, I mean, I think it's going to cost a lot of money just to move, relocate. I'm reading up on books. I'm looking into agriculture. I'm looking into farming, even though I don't have a green thumb. But what are some things that people can do, or what are some suggestions as to books, as to education, as to learning, if people want to go off the grid, people want to make changes?
Okay, I'll answer your question.
Thank you.
So here's what I did, because you're right, it costs a lot of money to relocate. And so I did something with my wife once I left my job, is I started working on organic farms, or I started just working on homesteads in general, because I could work for room and board. And working for room and board, once you get there, once you get to the spot, you really don't spend any money at all, because if it works out between you and your host, I've spent anywhere from 3 months or a week to a year on a particular property, basically working, and then they provide shelter for me and they provide my food. And there's a plenty of websites to do this. The best two that I know of is one called HelpX. And if you go to helpx.net and log in there, you can kind of peruse for free. And then I think it's like $40 for like a year or a 2 year membership. And you can contact any host throughout the world. And there's tens of thousands of them. It's everything from working in a hostel to working on a homestead to working on a farm to house sitting to pet sitting. Another one is Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms, so wwoof.org. And that's another one, but that's just working on organic farms. And what happened when my wife and I did this is we would get to a particular place, they would tell us their needs, and actually that happened before we even signed up or contacted them. You could read about what they needed, and we would learn. Like, I learned how to milk goats. I started at Guy's Place, actually. But then I went over and did it in Europe for 6 months. And I learned how to butcher a chicken. I learned how to harvest crops, plant crops, water properly, learn the difference between arugula and a weed. And I'm still learning. So my advice is to start by picking up some skills, because once you pick up some skills, you will be welcomed more into a community that has skills. And for us, it was about a 5-year process where we all the time were picking up skills, but at the same time, we knew we wanted community. And the things we knew we wanted in a community was we did not want to own a piece of property. And we basically knew that we wanted to live amongst other people that had a vast amount of knowledge. And we found that particular community. And it's not the only community in the world. There's plenty of intentional communities out there that are religious-based, that are secular-based, that are based in a whole variety of things that might fit your particular needs. And once we decided we wanted a particular community and what we were looking for, we just started visiting them. And eventually, quite quickly, we came across a community that we met right out of the gate. And we were accepted eventually into that community. And for me, it's not really about if I'm near particular resources or if I have access to them, because at the end of the day, I want to be around people that I care about, respect, and love, and the cards fall where they may. And and that's kind of my journey. So it can be done cheaply, because if you get into a situation where you can do it for room and board, you can do it indefinitely, and you can do that for the rest of your life. I have a good friend, Paul, who calls on the show all the time. He house sits for a living. He just basically goes to a place, he gets himself there, and he's got roof over his head, and he's generally got food. So you can maintain yourself a long way if you kind of give up as best as you possibly can on a paycheck. And what happened for us is we started getting we go to a property, and then somebody would find out we were there, that we're friends of the host, and they'd say, well, can they come and house it for us? Sometimes they'd pay us, sometimes they'd feed us, but either way, it always seemed to work out, and it just seemed to keep rolling and rolling, because one, we put ourselves out there, and two, we were very flexible to try anything and learn anything. And that's kind of how it worked out for us. And Forrest, you can add what you'd like to add, because you have different experience than I have. So,
I would just add that because you're in New York, I'm in Houston, lived in Los Angeles, and I think that, and I wish you could have been on the state online, because I wanted to ask her, is it more of a just logistic standpoint? Is it an isolation standpoint? What I mean by that is, I think that, and this is even talking about my own personal journey, what it is that I plan to do over the next few years is, I'm trying to put the word out to anybody that's in the Houston area, in the Texas area, who does understand and accept what it is that I accept, and then also trying to build something where I can move in, I don't say in mass, but just with enough people who have that same mindset, where that is the ultimate goal. And it doesn't even have to be where they want to get to the Great Lakes area, but more so just like, okay, well, we can help each other, where, okay, well, we can go and work on gardens, and then I can help you set up something here if that's where you want to stay. And then, oh, well, maybe these people actually do want to go up north. Or this, that, another. So I think that the most important thing for me and anybody else is networking. I think it's time to stop living in just this horrible isolation, which sounds like she's in more so than anything else.
Yeah.
The call out for your name, I apologize for that. I think that's where she's at right now, and I've been there before. So I think that my piece of advice would be just like, look, you need to be it online, be it at a coffee shop, be it if you get with this group or that group. I think that it's time to get out there for however much longer time is that we have left to get out there and see who else is feeling this way. But I know that there aren't that many people, don't get me wrong, but I still think that we need to do a better job, myself included in that, of reaching out to people who do see it, who are living in private health and maybe aren't even as articulate as you, Michael, or me, Forrest, whomever else, but still want to talk about the same things. And even if it's just to talk about it and to be honest with that fear, I think we need to do a better job of reaching out to those folks.
I agree. I mean, you mentioned it. You have to put yourself out there, whether it's physically or emotionally or online, intellectually. But eventually, physically, you're going to have to go out there.
Correct.
And I think it's a really these websites I mentioned, HelpX and the Woof sites, are incredible communities because the hosts are people who understand really how the world works because they're out there doing it and they need help. And what I learned from these folks, and here's a lesson people can take with them, is that most of these folks, they make the same mistake that they made in their what I would call civilized life, is they bite off more than they can chew, and so that's why they need your help. It's a benefit to people like you and I because we get to go and learn from them, and I learn just as much what not to do as what to do. Because I would go into places where they were totally overwhelmed. You know, a single guy, he's got like 10 goats and 50 chickens, and he's, you know, raising dogs, and he's got a full-time job, and he needs people to work for him all the time and to keep maintaining those things. Whereas Karen and I knew we didn't want to take this all on by ourselves and live in the middle of nowhere and try and raise all these animals. And so we found a community that knew how to do this, where we could go, hey, I don't need to grow tomatoes because I've got two people in my community that are growing tomatoes. I don't need to raise chickens because there's two people raising chickens. I can go in on projects, learn from those things. What can I contribute? Right now, I'm contributing my back. You know, we're the heavy lifting in the community. I live in an older community, and I'm happy to lift, push, pull, shove anything around and watch and observe and learn from these folks, because they have been out there much longer than I've been out there, and they had it figured out way sooner than I ever had it figured out. And that's the thing. If you can just step beyond that curtain of fear, there's a whole world out there waiting for you to step through on the other side and willing to help you and guide you along.
Yeah.
So that's where we are. Real quick, we got about 5 minutes left in the show, Forrest. Give us your rant on the Donald.
I don't really have a rant other than to say that, you know what? I don't want to say that I'm self-absorbed by any stretch of imagination, but I got to admit, I'm looking forward to the Donald being there just because I know he's going to provide me with plenty of writing material. I mean, he's already started down this path already, right? I mean, he's going in the office anyhow. And that's what I mean by I'm having more fun with this than I did previously, which is that we're headed down this path no matter what it is that I do personally, right? What can one single man do in all this madness? And I'm just saying that you shouldn't try and do some things, but if it is going to happen, then you need to find at least some happiness. Oh, sorry about that. Find some happiness in what is going on in this world, because as you know, there's nothing more tragic than seeing climate change happen and you can't talk with anybody about it. It starts to wear on you after a while. So you want to have more joy. You want to, even with the people who do understand that nature bats last, little plug there, that we can't have fun along the way, because we're all going to die anyhow, right? Regardless of whether it was climate change or just, you know, like even if it was just some catastrophe, an asteroid hitting this earth. So we want to try and enjoy our life as much as we can while we're here. Now, if you look at the cavalcade of fools that the Donald is surrounding himself with right now, I mean, how could I not have fun with this? Mike Pence? Donald Trump, was ExxonMobil's CEO. He's going to be the Secretary of State, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, a caricature is now our president. How far down the rabbit hole are we now that this guy from 1980s, Mike Tyson, that now he is our president? This is what I have to look forward to. But I'll tell you this. When I first heard that Donald Trump was running, somebody's Facebook page, I forgot who it was, they laughed and they poo-pooed it. They said it's not possible. I said, in 2000, I saw that George W. Bush was running for president. I laughed. He started going from state to state. Before the nomination, I laughed. He got to the RNC. He won a nomination. I still laughed. He debated Gore, beat him, for all intents and purposes. I laughed. He won. I stopped laughing. You know what?
Yeah.
I'm not laughing anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, anything is possible. And the amount of, I guess, his way of talking resonated so much with the average white American here hearing this play that I knew that he was going to win, because he played down to the lowest common denominator, the same as George W. Bush, because what did they always say about W.? He's somebody I could sit in a bar and have a beer with. And that's exactly how that's exactly how they feel about Trump. So, you know, and once again, just, you know, just so the audience know, I'm not a Barry person. I'm far from a Democrat, as you know, Michael. But it's just crazy to see how both of these sides of the political spectrum, the liberals, quote unquote, and the conservatives, how they're both looking for people who aren't going to provide them anything it is that they're looking for, which is really silence, right? Anything that's going on out here. Because neither one of them could fix it, even if they did want to fix it, which they do not. So the hairdo, the Donald, all that, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun 4 years. All I tell you, like Betty Davis said, buckle up, it's going to be a bumpy night.
And on that note, We'll take off. Thanks, Forrest, for your time and your voice and all you do. And get your ass out to the yurt.
I'm going to have to, because I better get used to it. Cause that's where we all going. I'll leave you with that. Have a good one.
All right, my friend. That about wraps it up this week. Make sure to like our Facebook page, Nature Bats Last, the Progressive Radio Network, and join our Facebook group as well. It's Nature Bats Last on PRN.FM. Feel free to post questions you'd like us to address in the show. Please continue to follow Guy's blog at GuyMcPherson.com for further updates, essays, and speaking tours. You can follow me at The Good Men Project and pick up my new book, Chasing a Different Carrot, which is now available on ebook. And you can find it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Google Books. The paperback version will be out sometime next month. We'll see you next month on the radio, February 7th. If you missed the show, make sure to find us in the archives at PRN.FM and rate us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher.com as well. Thanks again to your calls this week, Desiree, great call, and to Afrizin for the music, and Forrest Palmer for his time, voice, and wisdom. Until next time, remember, the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end, nature bets last.
Gonna get you.